Ecco la famiglia. Mangiamo e festeggiamo insieme.
Salute a tutti.
Buon appetito.
Welcome back. This espresso dolce segment and others that may follow like it are the dessert of the evening. We've had our meal, we've enjoyed our show, and in the culture in which I was raised, everybody would gather around the big table after the meals and they would talk and play cards and share ideas and catch up, mostly relive old memories. What I plan to do with these little tidbits is possibly use them as shorts in the future on other social media sites, while attempting to recapture that magic and that energy in which my great grandma taught me things. I can still remember how she taught me how to make ravioli and dry it on top of the bed on top of newspaper like they did in the old country. She would give me my own glass to cut the ravioli with, and I would help her from a very young age. The time that I spent in that loving, supportive, gentle environment, I firmly believe was a major reason as to why I can recall and remember those parts of my childhood. Because they were positive, they were supportive, they were loving, they were gentle, but at times she was very firm. She wanted me to learn and grow in a productive manner, in a positive way. And that's what I want for all of us, for all of you. That woman and my other grandma taught me more about confidence and how to develop and maintain a strength in my values. She taught me to rely on my intuition by setting an example of how she lived her life. Not only did she never question my abilities, she took it as a matter of fact because that had been something that had been in my bloodline for generations. Her matter-of-fact approach and her faith in my abilities and in who I was as a person, the fact that she trusted me was the greatest gift probably that anybody's ever given me. She taught me conviction. She taught me to speak out right from wrong. She taught me to stand up for myself. And let me tell you, even though she was 5 foot nothing, nobody ever crossed that woman. When Grandma got mad, everybody paid attention. I've seen her coo like a turtle dove and emanate the energy of an angel. And I've seen her throw people out of the house on their ears with a broom, chase them right out, or a rolling pin, or a frying pan. She feared nothing, and she revered her creator. But when she had rightful indignation, she was steadfast. I admired her courage equally as her ability to heal and to make people feel safe and loved, to calm them down, to teach them to lead by example. The first clippy from Truth Seeker 01011 is old. It's about Operation White Rabbit, but when you listen to her speak, you might learn some things. Also, though, you'll hear reinforcement of things that I've been talking about with you for years. You'll hear some of the same things that I've told you coming out of her mouth, so it serves as reinforcement. The one after that from Heybag73 is a little bit lengthier, but it's called The Deadly Cost of Ignorance. And I think we have something to learn from that one as well, although from a different perspective. She explains why liberal ideology is ignorance. And while it may be a bitter pill to swallow, it might be a clippy you could use on some of your friends to help them wake up. And I threw in some music in there. And another clip of a sort of famous speech you may or may not have heard before from a cartoon. So pour your espresso, grab your biscotti, and let's get started.
The world is a vampire.
Elon Musk just tweeted, follow the white rabbit, and I'm going to tell you the deeper meaning of that. So you guys know the Disney cartoon that was made around 1951 called Alice in Wonderland, where a girl named Alice falls asleep during a history lesson. And in her dreams that feel really real, because she's asleep, she follows and goes down a rabbit hole. She follows a white rabbit into an alternate universe where nothing makes sense. Basically, everything is inverted. That's key. So what's really interesting about this is the CIA actually declassified a bunch of documents called Operation Alice. And let me show you. So Alice in Wonderland tactics right here, done by CIA. And it's basically a confusion technique and also can be used to control the narrative onto an unsuspecting public through the use of psychological operations. Now, what's the point of that? Well, basically, if you're confused and you don't know the truth, you will actually look onto media and government for guidance in the future. And basically, you're able to be controlled much easier. So it gets even weirder because I found Exercise Alice that was done in 2016. And let me show you. And this leads to Exercise Alice, which is basically a MERS Cove pandemic modeling exercise done by the UK in February of 2016. Now, other countries had the exact same thing, and you'll also see similar names because it's all connected to mind control and psyops. Now, why would they do that? Why would they need to do this? Everything I've been trying to tell you guys is psychological mind control. They are basically trying to confuse us and make us not listen to our gut instinct so that they can control us more. Now, how do we stop this for the future? Anything that they implement, we are stronger in numbers if we do not comply. They will pump so much fear out there and they will tell you that everything's collapsing and everything's coming down and all of this bad stuff. Do not be afraid. Always stay in the light, speak your truth, and make sure that you have a group of people around you, whether you're out in the suburbs, whether you're in a really, really urban area, or if you're out in the middle of nowhere like me. Make sure you talk to your neighbors, work together, make sure that you have all the information that you need in order to basically combat what they're trying to do to us. And this is why I always say, do not listen to the media, do not listen to mainstream media. Follow your gut instinct, do your own research, and make sure that you always stay in the light, and the light is the truth, and the truth will set you free.
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
And what do you want? I want to change. What do you got? When you feel the same.
America is being torn apart, not by foreign enemies, not by open invasion, but by something far more subtle and far more dangerous. Ignorance weaponized as virtue. Every week, crowds gather in American cities chanting slogans, waving signs, and denouncing immigrant enforcement agencies as evil, fascist, or criminal. They believe they are standing on the moral high ground. They believe they are defending the oppressed. They believe they are resisting tyranny. What most of them do not understand is that they are not resisting anything at all. They are being used. Used by media narratives that thrive on outrage, used by political operatives who monetize emotion, used by NGOs that profit from chaos, and most disturbingly of all, used by international criminal organizations, including some of the most violent cartels on earth. This is the modern reality of asymmetric warfare in the 21st century. The battlefield is not land. The weapon is not guns. The target is not soldiers. The battlefield is public perception. The weapon is narrative. And the target is you. To understand what is happening today, you must understand how cartels evolved. In the 1970s and 80s, cartels were primarily drug trafficking organizations. They smuggled cocaine, heroin, and marijuana across borders using violence and bribery. Their power was limited to specific corridors and regions. But by the 1990s, that changed. Cartels began transforming into transnational criminal enterprises, not just selling drugs, but running human trafficking networks, weapon smuggling operations, money laundering systems, cyber crime units, extortion rings, and black market labor pipelines. They stopped being gangs. They became parallel governments. Today's major cartels, including the Sinaloa cartel, Sijing, Los Zetas, Remnants, MS-13, and others, operate more like multinational corporations than street criminals. They have accountants, lawyers, logistics teams, recruiters, political liaisons, and international financial structures. They do not just cross borders, they manage them. And their single greatest threat is not law enforcement. It's border enforcement with public support, which is why their most powerful weapon is not violence, it's influence. Cartels learned a critical lesson over the last two decades. You do not defeat a superpower by force, you defeat it by turning its own people against its institutions. So they adapted. Instead of fighting the state directly, they embedded themselves in systems that influence public opinion. Migrant advocacy networks, legal aid groups, international NGOs, human rights coalitions, media-aligned activist organizations, and on the surface, many of these organizations appear compassionate, moral, and humanitarian. Some of them genuinely are, but many others function as logistical infrastructure for mass migration pipelines, knowingly or not. They provide transportation, legal shielding, housing coordination, documentation assistance, fundraising, narratives, political pressure campaigns, and in effect, they normalize and sanitize the cartel business model. Because what is human smuggling if not the most profitable industry on earth? And who controls human smuggling? The cartels. This is where the conversation becomes uncomfortable, because it challenges the moral self-image of modern activism. Cartels move people. NGOs move money. Media moves emotion. Politicians move policy. And together, they form a closed loop of incentive. The more chaos, the more fundraising, the more headlines, the more protests, the more political pressure, the weaker the border, the more people trafficked, the more profit for cartels. No single NGO has to be evil for the system to be corrupted. The system itself becomes the machine. And once billions of dollars flow through that machine, nobody wants it to stop. Not the NGOs who receive donations, not the lawyers who bill hours, not the politicians who harvest votes, not the media who harvest outrage, and certainly not the cartels who harvest human beings. Now enter the modern protester. They see a headline, they see a viral clip, they see a crying mother, they see a hashtag, and they feel emotion. But they do not see the cartel recruiter who promised the migrant a fake job, the smuggler who extorted their family, the rape houses along the journey, the debt bondage contracts, the money laundering banks, the child trafficking rings, or the fentanyl distribution pipelines. They are shown only the final frame of the movie, never the entire plot. They are trained to think in binaries, good versus evil, victim versus oppressor, compassion versus cruelty. They are not taught to think in systems, and so they become emotionally reactive, but strategically blind. The result? They protest the very institutions trying to dismantle the criminal networks that created the suffering in the first place. They scream at border agents while ignoring traffickers. They demonize enforcement while empowering exploitation. They chant about justice while protecting the most violent organizations in the Western Hemisphere. Not because they are bad people, but because they have been psychologically engineered to feel without understanding. And here is the truth no activist sign will ever tell you. Cartels do not care about race. They do not care about human rights. They do not care about social justice. They do not care about asylum. They do not care about ideology. They care about control. They traffic women. They enslave children. They extort families. They dissolve enemies in acid. They execute journalists. They infiltrate police forces. They assassinate mayors. They run rape factories. They harvest organs. They recruit child soldiers. And they use humanitarian narratives as camouflage, because nothing protects evil better than moral language. The darkest irony in all of this is that the people most harmed by cartel-enabled systems are the very people activists claim to defend. Migrants are robbed, raped, trafficked, extorted, enslaved, indebted, blackmailed, murdered. But that part of the story never trends. What trends is outrage at enforcement. What trends is anger at borders. What trends is emotional theater. The suffering that actually happens before the border is ignored because it implicates the cartels, not the state. And the cartels must never be the villain in the story, because that would collapse the entire narrative economy. This conversation is not really about ICE. It is not about one agency. It is not about one policy. It is not about one protest. It is about whether Americans are capable of thinking systematically instead of emotionally, asking who profits instead of who feels offended, understanding the criminal strategy instead of repeating slogans, seeing manipulation instead of mistaking it for virtue, and seeing manipulation instead of mistaking it for virtue. Because once a society cannot distinguish compassion from control, it becomes infinitely exploitable. And right now, America is being exploited by cartels, by propaganda networks, by financial interests, by narrative engineers, by systems that profit from disorder, not through invasion, but through persuasion. So the real question is not, are you pro-ICE or anti-ICE? The real question is, are you thinking or are you being managed? Because every cartel on earth knows the truth. A nation that loses control of its borders will eventually lose control of its economy, its security, its institutions, its culture, and finally, its sovereignty. And the easiest way to make that happen is to convince its own people that enforcement itself is immoral. Not through force, but through ignorance dressed up as righteousness. That is the real threat, and it's already inside the gates.
Corgan singing about Job. Pretty interesting, huh? And how about those clippies? Did everybody else know the drug cartel was responsible for a lot of this PSYOP nonsense? The next one from 8 Daniel 8 Contreras 8 is hard to understand. He's standing outside by his ring camera on his front porch talking. So there's a lot of background noise, but there's good content. His perspective is it's time to stop waking up the masses or attempting to. Listen to this one and see what you think.
If you aren't listening to me or other people like me at this point, you're royally, because the cutoff was yesterday ago, and we're now at the point where you either did the work, you either locked in, you either ascended, or you're still stuck, and you're still in that scarcity, and the way that everything is moving is very, very treacherous. Because this infatuation that everybody has with the files, it's only going to get worse, and they're only going to start exposing more, and they're only going to keep calcifying your pineal gland. They're going to start boosting up the water. They're going to start boosting up the food. It's going to start tasting real weird, real quick, and it's going to start diluting you the second you ingest it. And if you're not putting intentions into your food, if you're not putting intentions into your water, you're going to get, this isn't a game anymore, and you literally cannot entertain. It's quite simple. It's quite easy. There are people who are demons. There are people who are angels. Your heart will know if you're dealing with a demon or an angel. No more exorcisms. No more bringing people to the light. It's past that. They either have it deep within them or they don't. And it's not your job anymore to try and pull that out and pull pieces and parts of you to add into them, because they're only going to use it against you. So the armor is here, the swords are here, the shields are here. Come on, let's stop playing.
So he had a lot of good points in there. The blessing of the food and water and energizing them is something that we've talked about for years on my shows. Spiritual warfare, entities disguised as human that are either malevolent or beneficial, angels and demons. And finally, putting on the spiritual armor. The last two clippies from Family Teams podcast talks about going back to multi-generational families as support and multi-generational empathy.
Families today make some strange trade-offs.
We put our parents in old age homes. We send our kids to school. We bring in nannies to take care of our kids so we can go to work. 5 jobs. While that nanny is leaving her kids where? Like, how does this work?
Right.
Intergenerational communities that are small, close-knit, you don't have to outsource a lot of stuff because you have it all within the community. And most importantly, it requires the people within the community to work together and to push up against the discomfort of conflict.
All right, he seems to be saying, let's move from living as families to forming these new intergenerational communities. 100%. But what he's describing is the multi-generational family that everyone used to live in until very recently. We don't need to invent a new kind of community. We need to move from only living as nuclear families to living again as multi-generational families. This is what generational empathy sounds like.
Our parents didn't have the luxury of finding themselves. They didn't have the coaches or podcasts telling them to regulate their nervous system. They had bills, babies, and pain, and they still showed up. And they held families together while carrying pain that they never got to name. They didn't heal with therapy trends. They healed through faith, through feeding their families, through doing what needed to be done. And adult kids now look back and criticize their emotional intelligence, forgetting that that generation built the foundation that everyone now stands on. They didn't get to rest. You do because of that.
All right, instead of generational empathy, we are all suffering from what C.S. Lewis called chronological snobbery. We take for granted all that past generations provided, and while standing on their shoulders, we mock them in order to harvest a crop of unearned virtue.
There you have it, cannolis. That's my first installment of what may be more to come of Espresso and Dolce. Let me know what you think. Let me know if you'd like to hear more of these. And please like and share my content. Join the Trim Radio Network Creator Studio. Check out the other shows they have available, like Thursday nights at 9 Eastern Standard, Peter Kling's Revelation. And on Saturday nights from 9 to 12, my good buddy Rascala with the Red Pill Reality Show. Thanks to all of you who stuck around. Have a great week. Take care of yourselves and each other. We'll see you next time. Buona notte, everybody.
Espresso, bitter and sweet. Worldly hearts and midnight meet. The taste of longing, so